You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is board certified in pulmonary medicine, internal medicine, with advanced training in anti-aging, which is amazing, Dr. Larry Emder. Dr. Emder, how are you?
I'm doing great, and great to be on the show today.
Always. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. How have you been doing?
Hey, I've been doing great. And the reason why is I'm doing my stress management techniques this week.
Are you really? What does that entail exactly?
Well, I'm getting ready to go on vacation. And so I've been shopping like crazy.
No kidding.
Going on a fly fishing expedition to Alaska.
Are you really?
It's actually a 25-year anniversary.
Wait, anniversary with you and your wife is going fishing, or
no? I actually did this trip 25 years ago to the week, and I was a young man at the time, and my son said, "Hey, Dad, you've been talking about this trip for 25 years. When are we going to do it?" So we have three father-son teams that are going into the Kinnicktok River in southwest Alaska for a six-day float trip.
Wow. When you say float trip, what exactly is that? Is that like floating on a raft and just fly fishing?
Well, we fly into Anchorage, and then from Anchorage, we fly to Dillingham, Alaska. Mm-hmm. And then we take a float plane to the headwaters of this river. It's called the Chosen River. They changed the name because they don't want a lot of pressure on this stream. It's actually the Kinnicktok River. We are camping, floating down the river for 6 days. There's absolutely no pressure on this stream. When I did this 25 years ago, I actually caught 122 fish.
Oh my gosh. What kind of fish?
We're catching all species of salmon.
How about halibut?
No halibut.
That's out in the ocean. Does that make me retarded asking that in that kind of water? I know nothing about where fish go.
The halibut is a fish, but that's out in the ocean. This is fresh water.
Okay.
So we're catching all species of salmon, Arctic char, Dolly Varden, trophy trout. I know I caught 122 fish because I took my brother 25 years ago and he said he caught 123. We were having a contest.
Oh, is he going this time?
No. I went with another physician who also took his brother, and I won the contest for the most obnoxious brother award.
Yeah, so, kind of sounds like it.
Yeah, so we decided to leave this brother at home, and I'm taking my son in his place.
Oh, I'm sure he'll appreciate that. And I take it there are no women on this trip, right? I didn't hear that there were outlets anywhere for blow dryers, mirrors, for makeup, or anything.
Women are actually some of the best fly fishermen. Persons,
heck,
I guess,
yes,
in the world.
They are.
They got the, they
I
got
know
the
nothing
touch
about
with. This is all father son. This is a father son trip.
Okay.
I
know my dad would be very jealous. He's a massive fly fisherman. Has the waders and the big. You walk into the garage and you're scared that there's somebody there because you've got the waders hanging from the garage and the big tubes that you sit on, and you walk out in the dark and
I know exactly what you're talking about. In fact, you're looking at someone who now has three pairs of waders. So I just had to go get a new pair of waders.
With your busy schedule, how do you have time to fly fish? You're doing like a million things. Plus, aren't you like the chair of Alvarado Hospital?
The chief medical officer.
Chief medical officer.
So, that creates a lot of stress. So, you have to have a stress outlet. So fishing is definitely my passion. And when I'm out there and careening with nature, it's just very relaxing.
Very nice.
Yeah, so
I'm very impressed.
And the good news is I'll be able to, eat the fish I catch because, I'm...
one of the things that you can eat.
Yeah, it's one of the few things I can eat. So that's probably what we'll be surviving on for the week.
Yeah, absolutely. Which clue our audience members in. If you have not heard our show, Aging Redefined, is we typically don't... The whole show is not necessarily about dieting. It's healthy aging, but nutrition comes into so much of that. So on previous shows, we've had cancer prevention, which deals a lot about nutrition, foods that you can eat, restricting the red meat and alcohol and those types of foods. In fact, for audience members out there that are interested, you've got to download our podcast that just started, and all of our previous shows are up there. So you can take a listen to those. But to kind of get you up to speed, Dr. Emder is on some very strict diets to make sure that he's following his anti-aging guidelines and looking younger than ever, I might add. I wouldn't say a day over like 40.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
So I just had a new low weight this week. You know, we had Joe Aiello on earlier in the month.
Yes.
Actually, last month. And, you know, he introduced us to the gluten-free diet.
Yes, he did.
So I kind of like to collect diets. So
that is a good term for it. So, Mrs. Emder's got to be so frustrated.
we need to improve her cooking skills away from meat products. But the weight, we hit a new low of 151 pounds down from 185 was my high.
Wow. And how tall are you?
I'm 5'10", so...
Okay. There's not a whole lot to you.
Yeah, there's...
I think at this point, I could take you.
I'm just
throwing that out there.
I'd like to see that, too. I would not put up a big fight right now.
And I'm not that big. I mean, if anyone's ever jumped on Facebook, but still, I think I've got a little bit on you. And I'm doing the gluten-free thing, too.
And how are you enjoying it?
Well, I'm losing my strictness about it. So I should probably be honest with that, because if you've got a problem, you confess it to others. You can kind of work on that, right? So I will fully admit I might have had some bread and muffins. There was cake at some point, but I'm working on it.
You know, I don't think it's really a big deal. I mean, you don't really have any health issues. It's not like you have a gluten enteropathy. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you have to be strict with it. I'm actually strict with it because, I've got some irritable bowel symptoms that have actually gotten better on this diet.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So you've seen improvement.
Yeah. So I'm doing it because I actually feel better. But if you don't have any issues, I don't think, you have to be strict about it.
I mean, the goal is really, I'm doing it, one, because it's, I just feel healthier. And the more that I'm going into now Whole Foods and spending, $150 on five items, like seriously, if it's not helping me physically, I'm at least stimulating the economy. So I like that. But I'm looking at every label,
That's smart.
So just to see if it's got gluten in it. And while I'm looking at the label, it's like, what is this phosphatidium whatever, and then corn syrup and all this other crap in it. So it's at least making me notice what I'm eating and paying attention to a lot more. Like even ice cream, not that we're plugging ice cream by any means, but I was at the grocery store, and out of all the ice creams on the shelf with corn syrup and whatever, I was like going to the Häagen-Dazs section, and it's like cream, cocoa, and one other thing. There was nothing in it. I'm like, this is awesome.
It's actually real ice cream.
It is. Yeah, the old-fashioned kind.
And the thing about this gluten diet is, even if you restrict your wheat intake, you're saving tons of calories. And, because basically wheat is, sugar.
Yeah.
So you have a piece of bread, it's like you're sprinkling sugar on your food.
Okay, that's true. But with that said, a lot of these other things that you start eating have a high fat content. Don't they? I mean, so I know Dr. Aiello was on and saying he doesn't understand how oatmeal or oats can be gluten-free. But if you do go to Jimbo's or Whole Foods, they have some granola that is gluten-free.
There's
still a lot of fat in it. So you got to be careful that you're not substituting one thing for the next. So I'm not going to eat gluten, but I'm going to eat this granola that's 240 calories in a half a cup, So that's not a good thing either.
Well, here's a trick. I'm not substituting anything. I'm just getting rid of the calories.
Not eating. I like the joke. You're on ice cubes.
My brother-in-law, who's retired, was over this weekend, and he's the one that actually got me into this dieting thing with this Dr. Esselstyn's Knives Over Forks diet about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And,
Forks
Over Knives.
Right.
And he was telling me that, he has trouble getting enough protein into his diet. So he has a protein shake in the morning. Mm-hmm. And to that, he found a rice powder that he adds. So he's getting 60 grams of protein. And I have problems getting protein into my diet. And on the way here today, my wife bought me a protein shake at the Costco.
Did it have gluten in it?
No, it was gluten-free.
Are you sure about that?
I have the can in the car. But
you don't know.
Well, I'll check it, but I'll know tomorrow morning for sure. I go to the bathroom. But I'm pretty sure it, you know, it's just protein.
Yeah. Somebody was also telling me about hemp powder as well. There are a lot of different options out there.
I actually bought that a year ago, and I never opened it up, and it went bad, and my wife threw it out. But that's a good protein source, you know, if you're a vegan and you're mm-hmm. concerned about, you know, getting protein from an animal. The hemp source is a good way to go as a powder.
As a powder.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of powder, I was looking on what's new in medicine. So
you know, we're doing so much chit chat.
I know. I can segue into what we really.
Yeah, we used to do like, you know, 15 minutes of what's new in the medicine. Now we're down to 30 seconds.
Well, now so. I'm much more interested in how your multiple diets are going. I find that fascinating.
It's going great.
I do. I find that fascinating. Okay,
so what's new?
Speaking of powder, two new scientific studies have shown that the standardized rose hip powder can not only reduce inflammation and pain in people with arthritis, but also help protect the joints of active people. More than 2/3 of the men who took the rose hip powder experienced an improvement in passive joint flexion, and more than 90% recorded improvements in knee extension. So for audience out there that's thinking, rose hip powder, what is that? Where can you buy it? Amazon. Totally check that out. It's not that bad price either. Okay, that was a quick one. And I've got one more. Well, we're very limited on the time we've got. One more.
The other thing is, remember, I think there's a lot of vitamin C in
there. There's a ton of vitamin C in rosehip. Yeah.
So you're getting
I have a lot
C.
of it. I put it in my tea.
It's very, very
yeah,
good.
It's super good.
Very good supplement.
Okay. A very large study of self-employed people living in France found that those who retired later have a lower risk of being diagnosed with dementia. Which is pretty much in line with the idea that you either use it or lose it. The study was created by researchers at the Bordeaux School of Public Health and found that the risk of being diagnosed with dementia went down for each year of working longer. The researchers found that workers who retired at 65 years of age had a 14% lower rate of Alzheimer's diagnosis than those who retired at 60. These findings uphold the idea that professional activity that is mentally stimulating and socially engaging is potentially protective against dementia. Mental stimulation and social engagement are not the only activities linked to lower dementia risk. A study published earlier this year found that being physically active in middle age is also tied to lower dementia risk later in life. So, okay, we're running out of time, but audience out there, stay with us. We have a great show planned for us today, and we actually have Dr. Weeks, who's going to be talking about some
sinus issues,
new surgeries
for ear, nose,
and
throat
problems.
Which
is good timing. I feel a little bit stuffed up today.
Okay.
But anyway, so stay with us quickly as we hear from our sponsor, Alvarado Hospital, and we'll be right back.
No one wants to think about having a heart attack, but should you or a loved one need life-saving care, you want to go to a hospital that has a track record for saving lives. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist at Alvarado Hospital. As a designated San Diego Heart Attack Receiving Center, we recognize the importance of getting life-saving cardiac care. Our state-of-the-art cath labs offer life-saving treatment when you need it most. For information, visit alvaradohospital.com.
Alvarado Hospital is one of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and had the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. Brought to you by Alvarado Hospital. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And this afternoon, we have such an awesome show planned. We actually have a guest on that is, I'll let Dr. Emder introduce him. But if you're a person that has allergies or, you know, is affected with anything sinus related, you've got to stay tuned for this one because it's pretty awesome. So, Dr. Emder.
Well, you know, we're in this... pollen season where everybody's eyes are running, itchy, your sinus problems. And we have an expert on the show today to help us manage these symptoms. This is Dr. Brian Weeks. He's the chair of and president of the Senta Clinic, which is on the the campus of Alvarado Hospital. Mm-hmm. Dr. Weeks graduated from UCSD for his undergrad.
Oh, local.
He went to University of Michigan to medical school, which is a competitor to one of the schools I went to, which was Michigan State. I think we had a big rivalry. And then he did his head and neck training at Baylor University. And he's now the director of minimally invasive head and neck surgery at the Senta Clinic. Board certified in ENT head and neck surgery. And we can just do the whole show talking about
right.
This,
so basically, he knows what he's talking about. Hi, Dr. Weeks.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I guess I should say. Yeah, and I'm still friends with Dr. Emder, despite the fact that he went to that evil empire down south. So I'm glad to be here.
And at the same time, I would like to throw out that I went to USC, so I don't think we like each other either.
No, we don't like you at all.
Yeah, I think
you,
we won't,
you know
our
what?
Schools
both
all
of you guys can, whatever. I'm going to do the show by myself from this point on. Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries.
So, sinusitis, inflammation of the sinuses, if you have symptoms of that, you're going to have a lot of pain and swelling around your forehead and your nose, you're going to have swollen eyes. It's worse this time of year because of all the grasses and tree pollens that are in the air. Mm-hmm. As an internal medicine physician, we manage it with antihistamines and intranasal steroids, and we may try to identify the allergen with desensitization. And I guess my first question for Dr. Weeks is, how is the surgical approach to sinusitis different or how is it similar than what an internist would do for managing this diagnosis?
Well, I think it's a great question. I mean, certainly when we approach these types of problems, it always starts with the medical assessment and the medical approach. I mean, if you can use medications to alleviate symptoms without having to do a surgery, that's preferred for everybody. You commented on some of the medications that you use. I think first of all, people have to understand that sinus problems and allergy problems are very interrelated, and at times they're even hard to distinguish. But typically, what you'll see is when somebody's suffering from allergies, you'll have, like you said, the congestion, the drainage, maybe some itchy, watery eyes. You'll have a lot of symptoms that are maybe just kind of chronic, ongoing, day-to-day symptoms. You may notice patients frequently will tell me that I'm really only symptomatic when I'm in my bed, or when I'm laying down, or when I'm outside. So they'll have very specific areas in which they're more symptomatic than others. And I don't know, Kendra, if you suffer from allergies, but many people will tell me, well, hey, I'm just fine when I'm at work, but when I get home or when I lay down to go to bed, I'm worse, or when I'm outside, I'm worse. Very, very telling. Sinus problems, typically, if you have a sinus infection, in contrast to allergy, you're usually, not feeling well during that period, wherever you are. And so I think that's the first thing to distinguish, is the types of symptoms are going to be often very different depending on whether you're dealing with an allergy or a sinus problem. And then, in the next steps we talked about, we'll kind of foray into that a little bit, but you'd mention the medical therapies. I mean, it's similar to, I think, what you sometimes see in your pulmonary practice, Dr. Emder, would be, you manage people with different types of inhalers and things like that to start, and maybe move to antibiotics in a different situation.
So basically, the reason that you would do something like surgery, is it because it just can't be controlled with medication? I mean, like, I remember, so I was younger when I had allergies, and I'd like to say I've outgrown them, but obviously they come back every once in a while. So if I could put up with it with a little bit of medication, whatever that might be, even if it's, Benadryl over the counter kind of stuff, we're good there, right? And then if it just kind of gets out of control, then it moves to something else, or?
Absolutely. So I think what we're seeing now is, clearly we have groups of patients that are allergic, and when we treat them with medications, they do well, they feel better, most of their symptoms are gone. And then there are a group of patients that simply do not feel better, even though we've used medications appropriately. We've given them, nasal sprays and antihistamines, and had them assessed for allergy evaluation, maybe allergy testing, and even allergy shots, or what we call immunotherapy, and they're not getting better. Those patients typically have something else going on. Surgically, when we think about why we do surgery because people have structural problems that are preventing their nose and sinuses from working normally.
Oh,
so blockages.
Right.
If you want to make a kind of a simple analogy, think about plumbing. if your sink is plugged, it has to be eventually, if it's plugged all the way and it stops draining, it has to be opened by the plumber or by, you know.
Drainer doesn't work anymore.
I was going to say, if you want to buy that liquid plumber, that stuff doesn't ever work in my house. But
don't try this at home.
Yeah, the coat hanger doesn't work in your nose, okay? No matter how miserable you are.
The snake.
That's right. Don't get the snake for your nose.
Well, what do you see on exam on a typical patient when he comes into your office?
So basically I'll just kind of, for education, I'll just say what a typical assessment would be. Come into the office, we'll take a history. A history is very important, as we talked about earlier. And then we'll look inside the nose, we'll use a nasal speculum, and then we'll almost always put a small endoscope in the nose. It's not painful, we anesthetize the nose, but what we'll look for is we'll look at how the lining or the membranes in the nose look. And in typical situation, either with allergy or sinus, we'll see congestion, we'll see swelling, we'll see frequently lots of mucus. Now, the difference is in an allergic situation, we might see a lot of clear, thicker mucus. And in an infection situation, we probably will see yellow or green mucus, and it'll be equally thick. So those are some distinguishing things. And that may come out in the history. Patients will tell me, yeah, I have a thick mucus all the time. I'm coughing up, you know, clear mucus. Or they'll tell me I'm coughing up, you know, green or yellow mucus. And those are obviously important things to get from the history and from the exam.
You know, what I love about having, guests like Dr. Weeks on the show is that, you know, I can get, like, ask my own personal questions that, you know, I've been afraid to ask one-to-one.
It's free consults.
That was stupid. But, you know, I can say, well, I'm asking this question for the audience. You know? So for the audience, how do you decide whether you're going to do more advanced studies like CT, CAT scan of the sinuses or plain film x-rays? What's the trigger when you decide to order more sophisticated tests?
Typically, if I feel like somebody has an allergy, and by the way, that is a great question. I'm not just saying that because you're my friend and sitting next to me. You can reach me with your fist, but that's actually a good question. So if somebody has what I think is allergy, I probably won't order imaging. I'll treat them with medical management. A lot of it depends on how much they've had done first, but if I think somebody has allergy, I'll typically treat with medications. If I'm really suspicious that somebody's had either a sinus infection or fall into a category of what we call recurrent sinusitis or chronic sinusitis, typically that's when I'll order imaging. So a lot of that's based on history, and I think severity of symptoms. If somebody's very sick or feels awful and it's really, really impacted their quality of life, I'll probably move along to an imaging study to really kind of determine the next best steps.
And what are some of those symptoms? Like, obviously, blocked nose, can't breathe through the nose, can't.
Quality of life. Yeah, those are great. Right. Those are some of the huge ones, Kendra. You hit them right on the head. I think, you know, when you talk about the sinus symptoms that really, you know, register on what we call the quality of life impact, things like facial pain, drainage, cough, inability to breathe through the nose, and then, you know, some of the situational symptoms like sleeping at night. I mean, sleeping at night is massive. And if you think about one of the biggest things that nasal symptoms do is they make it so that your quality of life is disrupted at nighttime. And, you know, how do you feel when you get no sleep because you're sniffing and coughing and you can't breathe?
I cannot function.
Exactly. So, you know, we're talking about, I mean, some of us don't need much sleep, but we all need some sleep. And that would be another symptom. I mean, so it's a combination of symptoms and it's when they affect you. Think about work. Have you ever worked with somebody who's sneezing and coughing all the time?
Oh, yeah.
First of all, it makes you, you know, it alienates that person.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it makes them somewhat non-productive and it makes others around them non-productive simply because they're disruptive.
It's kind of, I feel like we're kind of in a commercial. If you have any of these symptoms, please call Dr. Weeks.
Oh, 1-800
sneeze
today.
Very interesting. Then, you know, you mentioned right before, I know we've got to kick it into the commercial break, but you keep talking about allergies. And obviously that's with pollen, but does food play a role in that at all?
It definitely can play a role. I mean, I think we're in the era now where as we advance in medicine and become more sophisticated, the better we can look, the more likely we're going to find. And I think what we're finding now is that a number of people that have been, you know, kind of looped into one or another category have specific allergies in their diet or in their environment. And, you know, we've talked about some of these things earlier, even in our own little conversations. But I mean, just food choices, for example, gluten. I mean, I've had at least, you know, 100 patients in the last couple of years who've come to me and they've been on every kind of medical regimen. They've been on every diagnostic regimen and they eliminated things from their diet and their sinus and allergy problems went away. Now, yeah, it's really exciting.
See, it works. We're not just blubbering on about nothing. Like this nutrition stuff makes sense.
Right. I mean, it's
everything.
If you put what kind of gas I laugh because people will go to the gas station and pick a real expensive kind of gas to put in their car, and those same people will drive to McDonald's and buy a Big Mac and put it in their stomach. So, you know, we're more worried about our car than we are about our own body. So, yeah, food, your food choices make all the difference in the world for I think every type of medical condition.
And it, for you, when you're looking at somebody like that, is it just kind of trying to get stuff crossed off the list? So do you tell them to try these different things first and then move on?
I do. And I use our allergy colleagues. I mean, I'm not an allergist in any way. I treat a lot of patients who have allergy as a combination of their disease. But, you know, we have specific allergists who are really good at that. And I think the good allergists nowadays test for food allergies because food allergies are very prevalent. And the great news is treating food allergies is pretty easy these days. I mean, you can go to Whole Foods and treat any kind of allergy you might have just by buying those types of foods.
Right. And that's basically just is that a blood test that they're...
They can do blood tests and they can do sensitization testing. So they basically give you different types or different quantities of a given food. And then blood testing as well will play into that.
Well, I just say when I had allergy symptoms, I probably had every symptom in the book.
Which is why you're not eating anything anymore.
And it's improved on my gluten-free diet, but just joking. Everything's improved. But when I saw my ENT surgeon years ago, he had referred me to an allergist for skin testing as part of the workup. So that's, I guess we can touch on that in maybe the next section.
Oh yeah, totally makes sense. So audience out there, stay with us. We will be right back to continue our conversation with Dr. Weeks and talking more about allergies.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right, I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com, or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
When it comes to treatment of heart disease, there are many choices, but there's no better choice than Alvarado Hospital, right here, close to home. I'm Dr. Mike Michalski, a cardiologist with Alvarado Hospital. I am proud that our specialists bring a level of knowledge, skill, and technology that have greatly improved the lives of those in our community for the past 40 years. For more information about our cardiovascular and stroke services, please visit alvaradohospital.com or call 1-800-ALVARADO.
Alvarado is proud to be part of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder, and our special guest today is Dr. Brian Weeks.
I go by Brian too.
Brian.
I know, I like Brian.
I mean, Brian, that's like, I've never heard that name. That's a great name, Kendra.
I'm going to have to write that down.
How do you spell
thank
that?
You. It's the creative juices. It's just flowing. But we're talking about allergies and allergy symptoms, sinus issues, and we've got obviously the right person sitting here talking to us about this. So, Dr. Amder, I'll hand it back over to you.
So, one thing that Dr. Weeks can do with a sinus patient that I can't do is corrective surgery. Mm-hmm. So let's say, you know, if someone presents with, you know, chronic sinusitis and you've done this workup with, you know, a CAT scan of his sinuses and you find a mechanical issue. What are some of the surgical procedures you can do to relieve that mechanical obstruction?
I think that's the crux of the biscuit. I mean, that's really what we do. Anybody can prescribe medications. I think when you think about surgery, what we're doing is we're trying to open blockages, and that's to break it down as simple as you can. How we do that has changed dramatically over the last 10 to 15 years, actually over the last 7 to 8 years. Instead of removing tissue, instead of creating large openings, instead of, you know, making big holes where the sink can just drain in a big hole, what we've done now is we've developed technology that allows us to make smaller openings in exactly the right spot and to do it without destroying the structures in the sinus or removing tissue that probably is important and plays a role.
And like cartilage?
You got it. Cartilage, or actually, it's really not cartilage, it's bone. We take cartilage sometimes. Cartilage is sometimes taken out of the nasal septum, which is the divider of the left and right nasal passage. But specifically around the sinuses, it was bone and then the lining, or the what we call the mucosa.
And is that typically a problem people have that they might be born with? Or is this like they had an injury at some point and totally broke their nose? And
Again, great question. I mean, I think that what we find is the majority of people have what we call an acquired deformity, meaning, you know, they got bopped in the head by their sister or brother fighting, uh-huh. or they played sports and got hit by a ball. There are some rare instances or some instances where you have what's called a congenital deformity. Mm-hmm. Either you develop that way or you come out of the birth canal and have some, you know, birth trauma, not even birth trauma, but just gentle positioning of the nose when you come through the birth canal. But otherwise, most people have what we call acquired or traumatic deformity.
Got it.
Yeah. And then I think to that point, when you talk about not removing tissue, I mean, the biggest advance, in my opinion, in our field in the past decade has been balloon dilation. Think about cardiology and angioplasty. What this is basically the same exact thing being done in the sinus cavity and the nasal cavity. We're placing a balloon over a wire, over a guide wire, in that opening where the sinus is blocked, and we're using a balloon to gently inflate and reposition the bone. And you know, Kendra's looking at me like, are you talking about science
like,
fiction?
Well, when I think balloon, I'm like as big as my head. What is the size of this balloon?
Yeah, <they're>, I love this. It's great.
You can get the big balloon at your party, party store.
I mean, I could get you one to check out. The bottom line is the balloon ranges in size from 5 to 7 millimeters in circumference.
That
so it's
is
a
so small
balloon. But you remember, these openings are 2 to 3 millimeters in size in their normal physiologic working state in most people. So when you have a problem, and the openings we used to make and some people still make are, you know, 2, 2.5 centimeters.
Oh,
so
wow.
You're talking about 8 to 10 times the normal size. And what we found in a lot of the data that we're using now and are using to educate our patients is that making a huge opening like that in a lot of patients makes their sinuses unable to defend themselves.
Right.
And can create worse problems.
Makes it worse.
Yeah.
So does that balloon stay there, or is it like you just drag it through and it just opened it up?
We simply put the balloon in, open it up. It stays open for about 2 seconds and it's deflated and comes out. And, you know, to that point, I mean, we talk about minimally invasive surgery, and that's really what I'm an expert in terms of approaches. This is as minimally invasive as you can get. We're not taking out tissue. We're not disrupting the normal surface. We're simply moving the bones that are blocked into new positions, moving the surface and the bone into new position, and then removing the balloon without having to cut or remove tissue in any way.
And for 2 seconds, all it needed to do was just move through there and everything is in a different position, like permanently?
We're literally I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but when you're in the operating room, and I'll talk a little bit about one of the most exciting things of all in our specialty with respect to the balloon, but you can hear the bone break. We're actually breaking the small bones. again, another great look. At, yeah. I mean, it does sound, it's a little bit.
We can invite you to surgery.
Oh, gosh, that's really
I would love to have you in the operating room. Kendra, you'd have a blast.
Sure.
But truly, we're breaking the bone, and then what we're doing is removing that. And that bone is healing in a remodeled or open position.
You know, I'm actually a fan of surgery. I usually have a surgery a year. And
like you are under in the operating room, or you are performing? Like
no, I'm having surgery on myself.
You're having surgery
on
yourself.
I'm addicted to surgery. Okay. But no plastic surgery. But I did have a septoplasty somewhere along the line, not by Dr. Weeks, by actually one of his associates. And this is probably about 10 years ago. I must say that it was one of the most painful surgeries that I've had.
What did it call?
I think it was like a septoplasty. I mean, I had a blockage, but it was not.
This is what we're talking about. That's the multi-centimeter thing. That's not the good
right,
thing.
But
right.
But this was before, you know, I should point out that Dr. Weeks is one of the first people to do this surgery in San Diego, number one. Number two, he's a trainer for other surgeons. So he's an expert in this balloon.
Balloon dilation.
Balloon dilation. So I guess my question is, you know, is your procedure, you know, less discomforting than the, you know, the classical surgical approach?
Well, I mean, I can tell you that I do a large number of surgeries a year, and I would say probably 90 to 95% of my patients take no pain medication. So the answer to your question is, if you have pain after a surgery that I do, you know, you're either one of the people, a rare person that maybe just has a different pain threshold, because it doesn't happen. I mean, I do surgery on people. As a matter of fact, I operated on a dentist that he rode his bicycle 38 miles the day after surgery. 38 miles on his bicycle. No kidding.
That's pretty impressive.
I don't think I can do that now without surgery.
So I think, Dr. Ember, I mean, honestly, to that point, I think that illustrates greatly how much things have changed over the last 10 years. Hmm. I mean, this is not painful surgery. This is not life-altering surgery. You don't even have to miss work.
I mean, I was going to say, you can go back to work the next day.
Yeah, if you're a construction worker and you're swinging a hammer in 100-degree heat, I might tell you to take a day off. But the other thing I was going to mention is I do this exact surgery. Now, I don't straighten your septum. Because that's what you had, at least part of what you had. That only reason I don't do that, but I can do balloon dilation awake in my office talking to you under local anesthesia. I can literally numb your nose with a spray. I can put some small amount of topical anesthesia, and I can do a full sinus surgery in the office. And you can leave and go out to dinner right 5 minutes after you leave my office.
Wow. You probably, can you
drive yourself.
Can you taste anything though?
No. I mean, you have no packing in your nose. I'm not kidding. Of course you can taste something.
Wow.
it's unbelievable. So we call that office balloon dilation. And that is a very, very, very common procedure now in the United States. In the last month, I've done 8 patients in my office.
Okay. Now the thing that trips me out is you did say that it is breaking your nose.
So the patient hears the bone breaking with me talking to them and doesn't feel it.
But does it heals fine? No worry there? You just kind of move on, go on your little merry way?
No worry. And the key to all this is that the bone that we're moving is it's called papyrus bone. It's paper thin. It's literally like tissue paper. So the bone is very, very thin. It's very easy to move, and the balloon's a high-pressure balloon. So it remodels in that open position. And by the way, the studies that have been done, hundreds of papers written on balloon dilation now, it's a validated, you know, we've treated over 1 million sinuses.
Wow.
Since the technology's there've been over 1 million sinuses treated worldwide, and it's just as good as traditional surgery for staying open.
And so what does that do for a patient then? Can they all of a sudden breathe and everything's wonderful like nothing ever happened before?
Well, yeah. So the goals are, we're restoring the sinus drainage. We're preventing those infections from coming over and over again. We're improving breathing, and numbers of studies have shown that just by opening sinuses, the breathing will improve dramatically. And the quality of life impact is probably the biggest thing. I mean, we can decrease the quality of life impact scores, which, you know, the higher the score is, the more impactful the quality of life is. Mm-hmm. We can lower those scores, you know, I mean, by 40, 50, 60% with patients just by doing a simple procedure like that.
And so by reducing like the sinus impaction or whatever, would that also, and this is a total selfish question, get rid of like sinus headaches then?
Absolutely. The majority of sinus headaches are because the pressure that's building up when the blockage occurs is what's causing that pain. And if you think about it, if you've ever had a sinus problem and had to fly in an airplane or drive in a car,
Go scuba diving.
Exactly. Yeah. You'd mentioned, Kinder, that you're a scuba diver.
I just got certified. I'm very
excited
about that. That's
awesome. We may have found a new patient for you here. Kendra.
We'll do it, and we'll make sure we do it awake so you can hear those bones breaking, Kendra.
We should record that surgery for the show.
Exactly. I'd be happy to. We could get
It's okay. Yeah, thanks, though.
Oh, she's better all of a sudden.
Right.
So, future, where's your specialty going? What do you see as new procedures coming down the pike and new options?
Basically, I think, you know, the neat thing about ENT and our field is that, you know, we're because of what balloon dilation's done, I think the innovation is really moving forward. Right now, what we're working on is a lot of technology with drug delivery. So being able to do local drug delivery. So, for example, instead of using a nose spray and trying to get medication up in a sinus cavity after for allergy or whatever, we can put a small little implant inside the sinus cavity, which will dissolve over a 40 to 120 day period. So imagine, you know, you go in and
it's like a birth control, like IUD.
It's exactly what it's like. It's like it's an implant of any sort. And you put it in, and a patient who has bad allergies could potentially come to the office 3 or 4 times a year for an implant into their nose and not have to worry about trying to use a medication every day. And so I think that's one of the more exciting technologies is drug elution. And we're really, there's already some outstanding technology available.
Is that going through testing now, or is that actually available?
One product's actually available using that we use intraoperatively and the office technology is in testing right now and expect it to be available within the next 6 to 12 months.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's super exciting.
Kind of space age, you know?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So we'll have to hear more about it. Audience out there, stay with us really quick. This is a really interesting show, actually. we'll be right back after this word from our sponsor.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and had the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right, I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care. Just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com, or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And our special guest today is Dr. Brian Weeks. We've been talking about sinuses and allergies and minimally invasive surgeries with this awesome new balloon dilation technique. Did I say that right?
Perfect.
Awesome. Awesome. And there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipe too. But we'll switch gears for a second here. And Dr. Emder, I'm going to let you take over this section of the show.
Well, Dr. Weeks also does surgery for patients that suffer from something called obstructive sleep apnea. And these are patients that can't, at night while they're sleeping, they actually obstruct and they can't get air into their lungs, and their oxygen levels drop, and it has a major effect on one's health. Patients that have severe sleep apnea have difficulty or are at risk for heart disease, diabetes, stroke. So,
and as like a spouse or somebody that sleeps next to these people, it basically just sounds like they're holding their breath for a really long period of time, and it's scary, right?
Well, actually, the first symptom is if your spouse is snoring, they probably have some degree of obstructive sleep apnea. And then if they stop breathing for, over, any length of time, they probably have significant sleep apnea. And these patients need to see their physician and then get screened for obstructive sleep apnea, which is an overnight sleep study in a sleep lab. And they even have home studies now. If you're snoring or, someone in your family is snoring, and, this could even be your children, this needs to get checked out. And I actually, suffer from this. And we thought that this was just associated with people that were obese. And, I have a BMI of less than 22. So the weight is not the issue for me is congenital because I remember when I'd go on vacation with my parents, they would be sleeping and the curtains would be sucked off the window from their snoring. Mm. So I got the obstructive sleep apnea gene from my mother and father.
Yeah, my dad has it too.
But there's surgical procedures, approaches for this disease. And Dr. Weeks, can you comment on some of those procedures?
Absolutely. I want to comment real quick, if I can, just because you said probably the most important thing of all with the intro. And that is that, this is a life-threatening disease if it's not treated. And, we lost somebody, I think, important to a lot of us, all the Soprano fans in the audience. But James Gandolfini died about 2 weeks ago. He's a 51-year-old man, had a heart attack in his sleep, and he's an obese guy. I guarantee you that guy had sleep apnea. I don't know if it was treated or not, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if a large part of his disease was underlying an obstructive sleep apnea condition that they didn't treat. So, this is something that affects a huge number of patients and certainly gets worse as we age. There's no question. As tissue loses its tensile strength and becomes more lax, unfortunately for all of us, we all tend to sag as we get older, no matter, and for some of us in different locations. But the throat is an area that definitely sags as we get older. And so when we think about surgeries to correct obstructive sleep apnea, I think it's important to first say that surgeries are reserved for people with either severe obstructed airways who simply can't be treated with the less invasive treatments. For example, if somebody is recommended CPAP and they have huge tonsils and a nasal airway that's blocked, you can't use a CPAP effectively with those blockages. So many of those patients will do surgery knowing that they're in treatment is still going to be a CPAP. And then there are other patients that have very focal blockages. Again, it's in surgery, Kendra, it's all about blockages. Mm-hmm. Dr. Imder and I know that, when you have focal blockages, that's where a surgeon can use their craft to open up those blockages. And in sleep apnea in particular, if you have focal blockages, like your throat or your nose or the lower back part of your tongue, we can do procedures to create more space so that air can flow uninterrupted.
What is a CPAP?
CPAP is a device that sits either in your nose or your mouth, and it kind of serves as a splint, and it puts pressure in the back of your throat that basically keeps the airway open so you don't obstruct.
And you wear it when you sleep, right?
You wear it when you sleep.
Oh, okay, got it.
So it's continuous positive airway pressure. It's actually the go-to treatment for sleep apnea.
Very attractive.
It's very attractive. and when I wear that with my cervical collar, I don't have to get dressed up for Halloween.
Can you say Hannibal Lecter? Yes. That's what people look like when they're wearing that thing. Say Hannibal Lecter.
It's like, I'll take my makeup off, you put your CPAP on, and we are a couple good to go.
we're on equal ground here.
Equal grounds.
So the problem is compliance with CPAP. It's probably even at the best is only 60%. And a lot of people just can't tolerate it. So at that point, you would consider surgical procedures. I would say when I was diagnosed, about 10 years ago, and I couldn't use my CPAP because I had the nasal obstruction. The first thing I had to do is open up my airway so this, the pressure could get through my nose into the back of my throat. Mm-hmm. But could you talk, from what I understand, there's about a four-step process the things you can do to treat sleep apnea. Do you want to comment on what those
Absolutely.
Are?
So there's really a three-phase surgical treatment. And the first phase is basically what we call the soft tissue treatments. And so I think you've had most, at least some of those done from what you said. We think about the nasal septum and the nasal airway and then the back of the throat. And typically the first phase would be straightening the septum, reducing structures in the nose called the turbinates to create more room in the nose, and then going into the back of the throat, taking out the tonsils and lifting the back part of the palate. We used to cut out the back of the palate or trim it. Okay. Now really what it's...
That doesn't work real well.
Unfortunately, that's not that successful a surgery. So what we've done in the last... basically 5 to 10 years has created some procedures that spare the tissue, and you're seeing that common with the nose and the throat, and then lift the tissue into a new position. So I like to describe it to patients as kind of a facelift of your throat. I'm lifting the structure as opposed to cutting it out, and that's been much more effective, extremely more effective than simply cutting out the back of the throat, because what we did was when we cut out the back of the throat, we just made more scar tissue,
right.
And it often made people worse or no better. So that's phase one, and then we also do what's called a tongue-based reduction, where we use microwave energy to shrink the very, very back part. And I'm not talking about the part of your tongue where you stick out your tongue. I'm talking about the very back part of your tongue, which is down near your voice box. And so we're reducing that with microwave energy to create more space. Remember, one of the things that people define sleep apnea is swallowing your tongue when you sleep. When you relax, your tongue falls back. So phase one are those treatments. Phase two, and it real quickly, is to do something called a tongue-based advancement or an advancement of the tongue. And again, this is where it gets a little bit, I think people would say, barbaric. We're actually moving the position of the jaw by pulling it a little bit forward, and then in turn bringing the tongue forward. And we're also lifting something called the hyoid, which is a small bone in your neck. And we're lifting that and bringing that forward to bring the voice box forward and help create more space. Yeah. And that's phase two. And then phase three, which is the most extreme, is actually going inside of your mouth and breaking your jaw and your midface and moving those structures forward anywhere from 4 to 7 millimeters to actually physically move the bony airway and move the bone and bring the airway forward. And again,
I would call that the Jay Leno look.
Jay Leno look.
This is definitely not the minimally invasive part of things, is it?
This is where we call it, this is max. This is sleep apnea max over here.
And very rarely do patients have to go to phase three.
Right.
The majority you get by with the medical treatment, which would be the CPAP. Mm-hmm. And maybe phase one surgeries if you have any obstruction. And then I guess it's the patients that have trouble with compliance. And some people are very vain, or a very young person doesn't want to be wearing CPAP their whole life. And if they want to have children and they don't want to scare their wives, I guess they would be more. I've actually referred to one of our younger patients from the phase three surgery.
Right.
Really?
Absolutely.
That's a procedure that's really reserved for people who simply can't tolerate any CPAP therapy, and for young patients who have, really, really congenitally deformed or unfavorable anatomy. I mean, we see people sometimes who've had, just poor development of the midface and the jaw. Mm-hmm. And I mean, those people are not going to get better unless they have that bone repositioned. And, mm-hmm. There are very specific surgeries that are done for those patients. But, real quickly along those lines, I mean, when you think about sleep apnea, it has an impact on your health, on your quality of life. And, it also has impact on your relationships as well. Dr. Emder had mentioned wearing the CPAP, but also, I mean, there are people that now, whose bed partners won't sleep with them because they snore so loud, they stop breathing. And that's a whole nother topic, but disrupting that, the relationships that people live with, and that can lead to disharmony at home, marital discord. I've seen examples of that. Mm-hmm. Most of the patients that come in to see me are men whose wives told them, I can't sleep in the same bed with you anymore.
That actually happened to my dad. His snoring was so bad. So all of these things, trying to cure sleep apnea, does that also help the snoring aspect?
Almost all the surgeries we do for sleep apnea eliminate snoring or markedly reduce snoring to a point that it's usually very tolerable by the bed partner.
Okay. Because I know at one point he did look into it for a little bit because my stepmom was just not having it. And he was hearing that they weren't, you know, he had known people that had had surgery and that it didn't really work and stuff. So obviously these are, that was several years ago. So I'm assuming.
Well, technology's changed. And yeah. Again, a majority of patients get cured with just the CPAP, so they don't need to do the surgery.
Absolutely correct.
But the biggest thing is to, you know, recognize you have a problem and then seek treatment.
Mm-hmm. And with the CPAP, is that something that they can be treated for a period of time and then they get better and no longer have to use it? Or is it just
no,
kind
it's,
of like...
You sign up for life. For
we usually write the prescription for 99 years.
Yeah. Are you serious?
There's a form you check, 99 years.
Oh, wow.
So I guess they're trying to make sure it lasts for your whole life.
Right.
So on this trip, one of the reasons I had to wait 25 years is, you know, I have severe sleep apnea and I'm in the bush with no source of energy, and you know, how am I going to get by with not being able to use my CPAP?
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a battery pack, which is now made for my ResMed.
Wow.
S8 and S9. So that's the good news. The bad news is only good for like 12 hours, so I'll get two nights out of it.
Uh-huh.
But
you can recharge it. And which son is going with you?
My oldest son, Josh.
Okay. Is he prepared?
He's always.
Is he? Are you guys just bunking in a tent?
Yeah. We'll probably two to a tent. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, you at least you can. You've got Dr. Week's phone number.
Yeah. Right? Well, I won't be snoring.
Yeah.
Well, I should say that the outfitter, you know, is a friend of mine, and he's bringing two 12-volt marine batteries. We'll be able to use my CPAP the whole trip.
Well, there you go.
So my point is technology has changed. Even if you have severe CPAP, I mean, a sleep apnea and are using your CPAP, you know, you don't have to give up your camping and your hiking. You know, you can
just, have a life.
You have the technology to take that with you.
And for our audience out there that might have any more questions, Dr. Weeks, how can they get a hold of you?
They can call my office, and I don't know if the phone number, they can get that on the internet. I have a website, which is drdrbrianweeks.com. And basically, we also have Centaclinic, scntaclinic.com.
Okay.
And those are all great resources.
Perfect. We'll put that up on Facebook, too, so our audience members out there, check us out there at Aging Redefined Radio. You can see pictures from the show. And also, Dr. Emder, you've got a website as well.
Yeah, Healthy Aging Medical Associates.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Be happy to help you out with any of these diagnoses and treatments.
Awesome. Sounds great. Well, thanks for joining us today, and tune in next week, and we'll talk to you later.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone.